Hi, this is Dennis Byrd, and you are listening to the 5%ers podcast, where we will work together to achieve excellence in life. Lose weight and keep it off, have incredible relationships, and work for meaning and success. Join me on the journey to become our best selves and to lead meaningful and engaging lives. Thanks for joining me today. You're listening to the 5%ers podcast, episode number 57, Slow Down to the Speed of Life, interview with psychologist and author Joe Bailey. This is a really great podcast, at least for me in the time of life that I'm in. You know, it just seems like life just gets incredibly complicated and busy sometimes. I haven't put out really any new content for the last 6 to 8 weeks. In the month of March, I was gone 2 weeks out of the month. We've had a basement renovation project going on, which I've been involved in. I've got kids' activities and sports and school. And it just seems like I just can't keep up. And the whole idea about this topic, Slow Down to the Speed of Life, came to me after reading the book by Joe Bailey and Richard Carlson called Slow Down to the Speed of Life. And it's all about our mindset and that sometimes what's happening is life gets so busy, so hectic that we're forgetting about what's important. We're not even focusing on what's happening in the moment. We're so preoccupied with what's coming next and constantly living in the future or living in the past. And so we're not able to enjoy what's happening in the here and now. This is all about our psychological mindset and the thoughts that go through our head either really move us forward in life and help us, or they can really hold us back. And I know that over the last couple of months, I've had to use a lot of the principles that Joe Bailey and Richard Carlson talked about in their book, because it's been a struggle to be so busy and to feel like every day you get home from work, you hit the ground running, you've got activities with the family, and it just seems like you can't fit anything in that really seems to slow you down or just have a relaxing pace. It just, life speeds up. Well, this is all about not necessarily making life slow down, although that could be part of it. This is really about how do we keep our perspective and how do we keep our mind in the right place so that we're not feeling anxious and frustrated and angry as we go through life. And I think you'll find this conversation with Joe Bailey really helpful. And one of the things that I would really encourage you to do is to go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble and pick up the book, Slow Down to the Speed of Life. It's been such an impactful read for me this year that I'm going to read it probably once a year, if not twice a year, because the principles are so sound. And what I really found that the things that Joe Bailey and Richard Carlson talk about in this book really resonate with the training I've had in psychology and was just a great reminder of all the things that I learned in my studies of psychology and of the human mind. And really brought it home to me that during these times when life seems kind of out of control, if I can get my mindset and my thought process in the right place, life just goes better. So we're going to get into the interview with Joe Bailey. Again, the book is called Slow Down to the Speed of Life. I really encourage that you pick it up. Definitely get to Joe Bailey's website and you can find out more about him. And all that information will be in the show notes. Here we go. Joe Bailey, thanks for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much, Dennis.
Well, the reason why I wanted to have you on the podcast today is that my wife turned me on to your book, Slow Down to the Speed of Life, that you co-wrote with Richard Carlson. And it was just one of those foundational books that we are really going to read this probably once or twice a year because we felt like the ideas that you and Richard talked about were so fundamental to really leading a more simplified life and a more meaningful life that we just really have it top of the mind. In fact, my wife, I think, sent your book out probably to six different people as a Christmas gift this year. That's how much it resonated with both of us. But what would really be helpful to the audience is if you could just give a little background of Richard Carlson and then of yourself, and then how the two of you came up with this topic and decided to write this book.
Sure, Dennis. I'd be happy and honored to do that, to talk about Richard for a moment. Richard and I, basically, we met each other through our common interest in the psychology that has been called three principles psychology or health realization in the past. And so we met at a conference many years ago and just struck up a friendship. And he was an author, and I was also an author of other books. And we just had such a similar kind of style of writing and a similar interest in life, and just had, as I said, a good friendship. So we decided to write a book together. And as we reflected on, both of us had private practices, and kind of the theme that was running through our own lives, as well as the lives of most of our clients, is that people were just running out of time. People were feeling in a hurry, stressed, overwhelmed, and running out and buying the latest time-saving smartphone or device or technology to try to grab more time in their lives so they could parent and do their job and, you know, stay in shape and all the things that we do. And this psychology, those very simple principles of how the mind actually creates our moment-to-moment experience of our life, our psychological reality, really had changed and transformed our own personal relationships and the whole way that I worked with people in my private practice, the way I did psychotherapy, and also like you, Dennis, I do a lot of consulting with healthcare organizations and social service agencies, many different types of group, and I found that these principles were applicable to the work setting, just really to any dimension of life.
Right.
And so Richard and I, we were at Cambridge at a conference, and we were over a glass of wine talking and brainstorming about what we would write about. And that theme of the speed of life and the frenzy of the fast lane struck us. And as we were trying to come up with a title, I remembered what one of my psychotherapy clients said upon his graduation, when I asked him, "What did you get out of this counseling process?" And he said, well, he paused for a moment and he says, "I guess I learned how to slow down to the speed of life."
Wow.
And that phrase just resonated and echoed in my mind. And when Richard said that, it came back to me and I said, "What about that?" And Richard, of course, was had already written, I think, 5 books. And by the time he was 30, very prolific writer, I think, in his life, he wrote over 35 books.
Wow.
And he only lived to be 45. But he and I decided to embark on writing this, and it was at the same time he was writing another book that became probably the top best-selling self-help book of all time, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff.
Right.
So our books kind of came out at the same time. I think his book hit number one, and a month later, Slowing Down the Speed of Life was released. So we were kind of riding that wave of that book, and this book got out across the world, and it's in 26 languages and 65 countries, and it's really reached a lot of people. I don't know the total number of books that have sold, but it's close to 1 million at this point. So a lot of people resonated with this title and with what this book was about, because, you know, we as human beings in our fast-paced technological world that have created all these things to save time have actually become part of the problem, because we've thought of the solution as being outside. If we could just get our lives better organized with a better daytime planner, if we could, you know, somehow change our commute times or get a faster computer or a better smartphone. In those days, of course, we were talking about a faster fax machine when we wrote the book, or an email system. Facebook didn't exist at that time, and neither did texting and all of these other things that now seem to have become the latest thing that people obsess about.
Right.
But we just wanted to give back what we had gained for ourselves, because we were both pretty fast-paced people ourselves with very busy lives. And what we found and what we wrote about in this book was about how it's possible to live in this world but not be consumed by it.
Right.
To live internally at the speed of life, which is the present moment, mm-hmm. and to not be caught up in this illusion of our own thinking that would take us into the future or the past, either regret or worry. So we decided to write a very practical book that would apply to parenting, relationships, work-life balance, you know, just stress and all the things that seem to be on people's minds. And so that's how we came to write this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what really struck me too is just, you know, a lot of the stories that were in the book that really highlighted the psychology that you're talking about, and that whole idea of not, you know, living in the past and not living in the future, but trying to live in the moment is a big component of slowing down. And I find that one of the stories that you had shared in the book was about, you know, standing on a beach in Hawaii, looking at the sunset and just really taking in the beauty of creation and of the world. And another couple, you know, next to you, or I don't know if it was Richard's, you know, commenting like, wow, this is really pretty, but it's not like the one we saw in Tahiti last year. How, you know, just how often we are comparing things and, you know, constantly trying to say, well, this will be better, or we got to get to the next thing. And so you're not even enjoying the moment because you're preoccupied with what's coming next.
Exactly. And in that, you know, we're all kind of a fish in water to that phenomena, which is that our experience is always coming to us in the moment. We can only ever experience this moment, but mm-hmm. we can be thinking about the future or the past.
Right.
And that becomes our reality. This thought instantly through our physiology turns immediately into a sensation, a feeling, mm-hmm. a perception, a behavior, which looks like reality out there, but is really reality in here, you know, right. what we're creating on the inside. So we're just trying to help people wake up to the fact of how thought is creating our experience in the moment, and our feelings are this wonderful built-in alert system or guidance system, GPS, if you will, that guides us back to the present moment and to what's really happening in our lives. And rather than projecting our own personal thoughts on life, we're getting to experience more of the power and the beauty of the moment. And when people are more fully conscious of that process of thinking and creating your feeling in the moment, what happens is that you have more insight, you have more new thinking, more ability to not be so bound by your past habits of thinking or your conditioning, and to be more available from this deeper power of creation that we're all a part of. And it's just so, you know, if you look at little kids, you have young children, and
yep.
if you remember when they were really young,
yeah,
you know, how present they were, you know, it's like, it doesn't take much to be happy. Last night we were at my grandson's 10th or rather a 14th birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
And my granddaughter was standing there, and I said, Allison, I remember, she's 16 now, I remember when you were was your first birthday, and Grandma and I gave you this really beautiful wrapped doll in this box, and you spent the entire party playing with the wrapping paper and paid no attention to the expensive gift we had given.
Right.
And you know, because babies, they're so in the moment. They don't know they're supposed to like the Barbie doll. They don't
right.
know what's cool what's cool and what isn't cool. They're just fascinated by what is. And as we go through life, we develop ideas of what's cool, what's good, what's bad. You know, we judge things and experiences like that story that you just reiterated about Richard on the beach, mm-hmm. and how that couple was being robbed of their experience by comparing it to the past.
Right.
And this is so innocent. Human beings so innocently, because thought immediately becomes an experience. We don't even know we're doing it. It's not conscious. And we live in that filter rather than seeing through that pure lens of perception.
Right.
That happens when personal thinking falls away and we're struck with the beauty of the sunset. We're struck with the beauty of the child or the wrapping paper, mm-hmm. in the case of Allison as an infant.
Right.
What we're now teaching executives, and I work a lot with physicians, mm-hmm. nurses, CEOs, you know, people who live very demanding, busy lives, and seeing the practicality of understanding the source of their experience, you know, not as a concept intellectually, but as a realization.
Right.
And how powerful that is to make your lives more efficient and productive and fun and enjoyable. And it's, as one friend of mine put it, it's like you learn how to squeeze the juice out of life again.
Right.
Instead of having life squeezed out of you.
Well, one of the things that, you know, I've really come across is that as a species, what really differentiates humans from other animals is that we have the ability to understand the past and go to the past, be in the present and in the future, where most species just live in the now. You know, that's a bigger differentiator between humans and other species. And so one of the things I was wondering about is, what do you think's really at the crux of why people can't stay in the present? What's the biggest reason that people aren't able to really have the consciousness that you're talking about of their thinking and how their thinking is impacting their, you know, behaviors and their experiences?
Well, I think the biggest factor is that people just don't really understand how life actually, how our personal life actually is created. You know, we live in a world psychologically that's akin to the flat earth thinking of our mm-hmm. forefathers, mm-hmm. you know, where we thought the world was flat because it looks flat.
Right.
And once Copernicus and Galileo and several others started to put it together and see that we're actually round and we're not the center of the universe, that we're living in a much larger universe than we had previously imagined. Mm-hmm. And our role was much smaller in it. And because of that insight, there was a paradigm shift that led to the Renaissance, that led to the scientific revolution and the industrial revolution. And, you know, science was born, mm-hmm. in a sense, and discovery, the new worlds were discovered. So a shift in that to a deeper understanding of the truth of how the physical reality worked led to a paradigm shift. And this psychology, in my estimation, is that paradigm shift for psychology, in that we've always, I don't know about you, Dennis, but when I went to graduate school, I was taught behaviorism and Freudian psychology and family systems. And at Larian, actually, we had Rudolf Dreikers was on our faculty. And,
oh, okay. Yep.
So I learned a lot about different schools of psychotherapy, but mm-hmm. the predominantly view was that our reality was the sum total of our past experiences, mm-hmm. our childhood, our upbringing, our patterns of thinking, our the habit self. And the new paradigm that I think is emerging in psychology and in science is showing us that our moment-to-moment experience is a function of thought in the moment. Recent studies at Harvard and University of Wisconsin-Madison have shown that, like, even stress, even though it can be a very debilitating experience, Stress in itself is not really harmful. It's how we think about stress that leads to arterial cardiovascular diseases. It actually changes our physiology if we think of it as a negative thing. And this is, you know, as a psychologist, I was, you know, trained in cognitive psychology and all these things, but I didn't really understand thought as a principle.
Right.
That thought in and of itself is a constant, and you cannot experience anything psychologically except what you're thinking in the moment. And that was for me a breakthrough in on a personal level, because I started seeing that the stress I was experiencing wasn't coming from the traffic. It wasn't coming from the clients I had to see that day, or the deadlines, or the fact that my computer just broke down. Right. It was coming from how I was thinking in the moment about that. Mm-hmm. And when that became visible and conscious to me, it not that I completely am aware of that 24/7. I mm-hmm. fall into the hypnosis of my own thinking on a daily basis. But I understand now that my world is not flat.
Right.
It's a round world. It's an internally generated reality. And when I see that, it really puts much more ease into my work, into my relationships. I have more patience, more presence, more ability to listen, to be calm, to enjoy, to let go of things more quickly, to be more resilient, really, and right. To put in a nutshell, to be able to rebound more quickly from apparent adversity,
right,
which is really just me thinking a reaction in the moment about my situation or my circumstance.
Well, and one of the things you talk about in the book is that thoughts are the creator of our experience, and consciousness makes them appear
yes.
real. And, you know, I think some of the examples you give is how, you know, people will kind of gear up for a fight with their spouse or their partner, and so on the way home, they'll be thinking about the arguments they're going to have and how they're going to, you know, argue back and what that person's going to say and how they're going to respond. And so by the time they get home, they've actually have primed themselves for an argument. They've created that experience. Mm.
Yes. Yeah. I'll tell you a quick story, if it's all right.
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead,
Dennis. Early on when I was learning this concept that we talk about in the book, I had a very difficult relationship with my own dad. Mm-hmm. And my whole life I wanted to just love my dad and have a good relationship with him, but we were always in conflict, and I was always disappointed in him and how he related. He was very didn't express himself. He was very shy, mm-hmm. you know, kind of judgmental, just non-demonstrative father, and to my disappointment. And so I spent many years in therapy working through that relationship, and actually involved him in therapy. Mm-hmm. But whenever I was with him, I would always have this disappointment. It would always end in disappointment and be preceded with a feeling of dread about seeing him. And one day, a year or two after I'd learned these principles that I talk about and Richard and I talk about in the mm-hmm. book, I was driving up my mom and dad's driveway and with my wife in the car. And while I was driving up the driveway, I had this experience of this pit in my stomach and just that feeling of dread, you know, where you just kind of, ugh.
Yeah.
And I was unaware of it. I was just driving the car up the road. But in that moment, I became conscious that I had this feeling. And then the next second, I had this awareness that I wasn't even with my dad. I was in the car. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I had made it all up in my head. I'd already had a bad time with him in a matter of seconds, mm-hmm. just driving up the driveway. And that struck me as so funny that I started laughing out loud. And my wife looked at me as though I had lost my marbles and said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "I just realized that all that time and money I spent on therapy had really nothing to do with my dad. It had to do with my thinking about my dad."
Right.
And that was a profound insight that led to a lightheartedness. I felt so humbled by that and enlightened by that mm-hmm. thought. And I thought, well, this is going to be interesting when I walk in and see my dad. And I did. And I walked in and he was on the phone. And immediately the thought went through my head like a ticker tape. Oh, there he goes, ignoring me again. Mm-hmm. But I was like, had some perspective on my thinking at that point. And I thought that was funny that I would take it personally that he wasn't looking at me when he was on the phone. And so I started to kind of wake up to my side of the relationship, my thinking about my dad, and it transformed our relationship. Now, you know, summarizing it very quickly here, but over the course of the next 13 years, the previous 33 years of a bad relationship transformed into a great relationship. And he didn't learn these principles. I just saw where my experience of my dad was coming from. And when that veil of expectation and disappointment left my mind, I saw how much my dad actually loved me. Right. And I experienced love. And I felt close and connected to him. And I could see that my judgments were what was keeping me mm-hmm. from experiencing that love. And now he was still acted the same way, but I experienced him in a different way because my thinking changed.
Right.
So that's the power of waking up to seeing your thinking. And there are thousands of examples I could give of people who saw their job differently. You know, like I work with physicians a lot who are burned out.
Right.
And reporting how this understanding of their thinking, you know, decreased their stress and burnout dramatically. They fell in love again with their job as a physician. Mm-hmm. Their connection with their patients improved just because they started seeing that their annoyance, their bother, their frustration with the electronic medical system,
right,
all of these things were really their thoughts about it, not the system, and not that they don't try to change and make the systems better. But their stress about their circumstances was created internally. And so it's really a wonderful gift, as you and your wife have found, when you kind of get your compass readings, you know, you get your bearings back, you know, where your experience is coming from, it can really right you. Mm-hmm. It can sort you in a way that allows you to be present and in the moment.
Right.
And to really get to be better at your job as a counselor or a coach or a physician or whatever it is that you do for a living, to be a better parent, to be more mm-hmm. present with your kids and really hear them, what they're saying, and not, you know, be in a hurry, you know, or distracted or impatient. And even when you are, to recognize that, you know, when you're a little off balance or, you know, maybe you're caught up in your thinking, if you can catch that in the moment, it can shift things rather quickly.
Right.
Richard had a great story. I don't know if this is in that book or not, but he and his wife were dear friends of ours. Were grousing one day about, you know, just, oh God, I can't believe we got to get together with the Smiths next month, you know, for dinner. They're so conservative. I know we're going to get in a political argument. And he was going on, and Chris was going on with him. And Jazzy, who was, I think, 7 at the time, looked up at Richard and said, "Daddy, why don't you wait till you get to the party to have a bad time?" And it was, you know, out of the mouths of babes, you know, right. this wisdom. Richard, the great author of millions of books, and his 7-year-old just really, you know, put him on his heels with that. Because he was doing what we all do. We get caught up in our thinking about the future or the past, mm-hmm. and we forget where it's coming from.
Right.
And we lose the moment. We lose what's happening right now, what's available right now with our kids, with our spouse. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things
seeing the beauty.
Oh, sorry. One of the things that.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to, you know, talk about is, Sometimes I feel like, you know, people that can live with self-awareness are kind of a special breed of individual. Not, and either they're a little more wired for introspection, or they've been in counseling, so they've had a little training. But it just seems like so many people are not able to really connect the dots between their thoughts and their emotions and their behaviors. You know, how do you really get somebody? How does somebody break through that mode and create that awareness that they really need in order to put their thinking in the right perspective?
Well, I think it starts with understanding, mm-hmm. you know, with, you know, getting an understanding of how things work. Like a lot of my work, Dennis, is working with people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. I consult to several treatment centers and have worked with that population most of my career.
Okay.
And these are people who usually are very much not in the moment, right. very much looking outside of themselves for pleasure or for distraction or mm-hmm. numbing out of their feelings through right. chemical substances. Mm-hmm. And so they usually aren't really on the search for enlightenment. you know, they're not in the self-help book department of any bookstore. They're right. they're at the local bar or drug dealer. But when they come to treatment because their life has hit a wall, it's hit a crisis, and they are realizing that they have a problem. It's kind of a wake-up call. And so in those moments when people are humble and open, and they're provided with a deeper understanding of life and how it works, there's more receptivity. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't make someone be receptive, but you can be an example of it.
Right.
And you can be a carrier of it by your example and by your presence. And so I find this, like in AA, they talk about AA being program of attraction, not promotion. Mm-hmm. I find that people living in an understanding of the principles of how life is actually created and our reality of it is actually created give hope to others or a possibility that things can be different. So when a person does have that moment of openness and awareness, they'll be better able to listen and gain a deeper understanding for themselves. So as you know, I love to ski. Mm-hmm. The more I learn about skiing through taking lessons from good skiers, the more fun skiing is and the better I get at it. Mm-hmm. And it's usually things that I don't see that I'm doing that a good coach or instructor can point out and help me see, well, you know, if you put your weight on the downhill ski, that might work better for you, you know, right. and little things like that I hear, as they get internalized through experiencing it and feeling it as I'm skiing. And then I realize what he was talking about in the lesson, that experience gets integrated into my skiing. Right. And it's the same way with principles of living, that when we hear these principles and then we go through rough experiences like that one with my dad. I was teaching people about these principles long before I realized the profundity of it with my father. Mm-hmm. So you can intellectually understand something and you can even realize it about many things in your life, but it's only through insight that change happens. Mm-hmm. And insight is a sight from within. It's a sight from your deepest inner wisdom. We all human beings are born resilient mm-hmm. and born with this capacity for new thought or insight. And when you have an insight, whether that's born of suffering and tragedy mm-hmm. or born of curiosity, because you don't have to suffer to wake up. You can wake up through just an innate curiosity. Like Richard was that way. Richard Carlson was this just very loving, delightful human being was who his first books were all about interviewing people like, you know, Mother Teresa, the Dalai Lama. He met with all of these great spiritual leaders because he wanted to understand. And he really evolved very quickly in life as a young man because he had this deep sense of spiritual curiosity. Right. And so that's one way. But suffering is another way that people wake up. And it doesn't really matter how you get there. It's all about waking up and realizing your own inner wisdom, which is really the only way, you know, no matter what kind of, you know, like as a student of psychotherapies, you know, when they've done research on what therapies are most effective, the common finding is that all therapies work whenever anyone has an insight. Right. And it's at those moments of insight, whatever the therapeutic process is, it's the insight that actually changes the person. And so these principles that I talk about in the book with Richard are really pointing people more directly to where that insight comes from, rather than to coping mechanisms or to techniques or strategies to change your life from the outside. It's helping people access their inner compass, their inner source of wisdom that will allow them to go within and discover deeper the truth that's already inside each of us. Now, I know that sounds like a cliche, you know, you've probably heard it 1,000 times, but it's really the truth that, and I know that with every client I see or person that I coach is that they already are resilient. They just don't know it. They already have mental health. They just don't know about their thinking and about this wisdom, this universal intelligence that's pre-existing in each human. And if they just understand how to access it and how to let go of the thinking that's getting in the way of it, it helps people see their own wisdom.
Well, I think that in so many ways, what we're talking about is a life skill that I don't think I think we do have internal wisdom that if we can unleash it, we can come up with a lot of great insight. But I think it actually takes training to be conscious of our environment, to be conscious of our thoughts, and to be aware of what's happening internally. I know that for me, it was a process of learning how to do that. It wasn't just one day I woke up and I had, you know, this insight. And so one of the things that I find in our society that just people, because they're running around so much and because they're so hectic and frantic, is I think part of being able to be conscious and have awareness is just actually being able to slow down enough and live in the moment so that you can actually gain access to the thoughts that are filtering through your mind.
Well, yeah, and we get reminders of that all day long in everyday life, right. But you have to be, I call it being on the bus stop, you know, of insight. You can't make an insight happen, but you can be at the bus stop where the insights show up. And so that does take, you know, real conscious commitment to waking up, to getting on the path where you can really discover from within who you are, and that can lead you in all different directions, whether it's to reading a book or seeking out a coach or going to a lecture or something, anything that your intuition will guide you to. Things that will help you discover what is actually in you, but there are many things that we do along. You know, whether it could be as simple as, you know, going out for a run in the morning and having that quiet time of being out on the run, or going for a walk around the lake, or taking 10 minutes to write in your journal, or, you know, each person, it's going to be something different.
Right.
But it's that intention of wanting to listen to your own heart, mm-hmm. to your own inner yearnings, to your own inner insights that are always there. It, for me, it was like discovering this best friend that existed within me that I've been ignoring for years,
right.
not picking up the phone and calling. And then, seeing not to not look outside, but to look within,
mm-hmm.
that was huge. My teacher, Sydney Banks, who I first learned this from, said, you want to point yourself in the right direction and then do nothing. And I, for years, I couldn't figure out what he meant by that.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that we're always looking outside for our answers when the answers are already inside.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't trust ourselves. We look to experts. We look to other people or circumstances to find that feeling. But we really give it to ourselves. That's the biggest, most well-kept secret. We give ourselves our own feelings moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
And once we find the source of that experience, we find our power and our freedom and our just how extraordinarily rich our lives can be when we wake up and slow down to the speed of life.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that, you know, I see just with the people that I work with on a regular basis, the people that I coach, is that if I would say, you know, you've got all the internal wisdom you need to solve your problems. You know, I think a lot of people would look at that and say, that's a little woo-woo. You know what I mean by that? That's a little, you know, that's a
yeah.
little too touchy-feely. You know, I work with a lot of people that are very analytical, very kind of process-driven people. And I know that's one of the concepts you talk about is analytical thinking versus free-flowing thinking. Maybe we could touch on that in just a bit. But I think that for a lot of people, when you say things like that, it's like, come on, seriously? Do I, you know, if I had the internal wisdom, you know, why isn't my life better? You know, if I had the internal wisdom, you know, why am I struggling so much? And so sometimes I think those concepts, while true, just I think for a lot of people, that just seems like, man, you're on a cloud. Where are you?
Yeah, caca. This is crazy. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah, I work with most of the people I work with are very analytical thinkers, mm-hmm. you know, scientists, researchers. So I present this in a very scientific way. It's the science, the art of resilience, the art of mental health. It is a true science. And every science is looking for the fundamental principles or constants behind anything. Like gravity is a constant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the physical sciences, we look for mm-hmm. the constants of, in biology, the biological sciences, there are fundamental principles that govern the laws of growth and reproduction and digestion and, you know, all of these things.
Right.
So in our psychological experience, there are principles as well. And just saying look within, that's just a cliche. That's not going to do it for people, even though it's true
mm-hmm.
that the answers are within. People need to understand kind of the science behind how our emotions and our perceptions and our behavior are created. And we've been looking to the results of our thinking rather than to the cause of our behavior, our perceptions, our emotions. So we've been educating people about this as kind of peeking behind the curtain, in
right.
a sense, to the invisible principles that are operating 24/7 and always have been, but we haven't really been fully articulated. So when we understand thought as a principle,
mm-hmm.
that we're always thinking,
right,
that's a constant And whatever we're thinking, consciousness, which is awareness, is going to bring that thought to life as an experience. You know, so when you and I are driving down the street, you are going to notice different things than I am.
Right.
And we're going to notice things that we're interested in or that are on our mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same street, but each person is going to have a different experience. Let's say we're a busload of people driving through the city. If you, like, one time I was interviewed on WCCO locally here,
mm-hmm.
when this book came out, and I went down with the producer on 35W, where it comes out of downtown Minneapolis.
Right. Yep.
And I interviewed every person as they were stuck at the stoplight waiting to get on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And so there I am with the camera crew and microphone, and I just asked them, what are you feeling right now and what are you thinking? And I probably interviewed 35 people.
Mm-hmm.
And every person shared a different experience. Some people were angry and upset. It was Friday afternoon. It was 4 o'clock. They wanted to be home and couldn't wait to enjoy the weekend. And they were feeling angry and frustrated and impatient. Other people were feeling guilty that they weren't home with their children. Their kids were waiting for them and
mm-hmm.
they were having a guilt experience.
Right.
Other people were saying, oh, this is great. This is the only time of the day I get to relax. You know, when I'm stuck in traffic, I've got a great excuse to not be anywhere. I'm just, this is like meditation time for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole gamut of feelings were expressed. And the producer was shocked. She was from New York City and she thought everybody would be angry.
Right.
But the truth was, it was, everybody was having a different experience based on what they were thinking in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they were all in the exact same physical location, going through the same external experience. So it was a demonstration of how thought works.
Right.
To create our experience. And seeing that is a game changer.
Absolutely.
Seeing that is like one family doc I worked with, I just interviewed and did a video of, she said, I was working 14-hour days. I'd come home, have to take care of my kids, get their meals prepared, wash their clothes, do this, spend time with my husband. And then before I went to bed, finish my charting by midnight so I could get up at 4 a.m. and start it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sleep deprived. I'm exhausted. I hate my job now.
Right.
I'm, you know, it's like, it's not fun anymore. And after she had this insight about her thinking, she shortened her workday by 4 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
got things done much more quickly, more efficiently, started enjoying her work with her patients. When she showed up at home, she wasn't stressed out. She was more present for her kids. And she said, I can't believe it. It was my mind that needed changing, not my job.
Right.
And now it's still stressful at times at work, but I now see how to nip it in the bud, mm-hmm. because I know that if I go there, I keep thinking about that, the computer system, or that I was double booked today or triple booked, that'll drive me crazy.
Right.
So I just do one thing at a time, and whatever I'm doing, I do it in the moment. I've finished that progress note. I do that dictation. I talk to my nurse. I'm with that patient. I'm not thinking about the next four or the last three. I'm with that patient right now.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, slowing down to the speed of life, that moment, my life is so much richer and more full than it was before. So I know it can sound woo-wee, you know, Dennis. When I heard this, I was like, I wanted to run out of the room as fast as I could. I thought, it's much more complicated than that. And it just sounded trite, but 35 years later, and after, you know, organizations change, companies, communities, school systems, not only here in this country, but all over the world, it's just hard to argue with the results of that simple little insight. That it's an inside-out world.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting just because, you know, after reading the book, my wife and I went with our kids to Florida for spring break, but we piggybacked on a medical conference that she was going to. And this is the third time we've gone to the conference. It's the same exact hotel. We've actually had the same exact room. And, you know, it's the same week of the year. And how one of the things that I really tried to practice on this particular trip was letting this trip be the trip, not comparing it to the 1 week that it was in the upper 80s and sunshine every day, not comparing it to the year before when we knew other people there, but just saying, you know, this is its own trip. And just because we're at the same place, in the same location, at the same time of the year, doesn't mean we're going to have the same experience. And we need to be open to whatever experiences happen versus always looking back or looking to the future of like, well, maybe next year we should be going to a different location. And how much more enjoyable the trip was just because I wasn't constantly comparing it with the trip with better weather or with the other people that we knew there, and how living in the moment and being conscious of your thinking about how it can take you off track can improve anything just from a vacation, where I've seen people go on vacation and get so stressed out or so disappointed that they come back and they're exhausted and they felt like it was a waste of their time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, one of the things that you talk about in the book, and we probably should wrap this up because I want to be conscious of your time, is you go into some, you know, into some material around analytical and process thinking versus free-flowing thinking. And I think that's a really interesting idea about how analytical thinking is good for some things, but it's usually not good for solving complex problems. And that's where the free-flowing thinking really comes in hand. But could you just take a couple minutes and explain just really what analytical and process thinking is and how that differs from free-flowing thinking?
Yeah, well, I don't use those terms anymore. Okay. I did when we wrote the book, but sure. The concept behind those words is still really valid. That mm-hmm. you know you can feel, you know, like if you have a problem and you're ruminating about it or mm-hmm. worrying about it, mm-hmm. Usually becomes circular thinking, and you don't. You know, if you look at the research on when people get their best thinking or their insights or that moment of clarity, it's usually not when they're sitting around worrying or ruminating about it, but usually it's in the shower, mm-hmm. When they're exercising, or in the middle of the night, mm-hmm.
Keeping you
when
up.
They've just woken up asleep, you know, have this insight, this aha moment. Mm-hmm. So when our mind is flowing, in a sense, when we're more calm or relaxed, we're not bearing down on our thinking, mm-hmm. The mind works better.
Right.
And when we're using effort and ego and we combine that with fear and insecurity, it speeds up our thinking, but it doesn't help us solve problems that we've never confronted before. Mm-hmm. Now, the analytical mode that I talked about in the book is just memory. You know, the brain is a great computer. Mm-hmm. And when you have a problem that you already have a solution to, your brain will work very effectively at remembering the solution to that. Mm-hmm. But what gets us in problems is that often in life, it's the, you know, how do you deal with the convincing your child to get them to clean their room,
right.
Or you know, how do you solve an issue between you and your wife when you're at an impasse and you just keep going around and around? If you're caught up in your habitual thinking,
right,
there's no room for insight. Mm-hmm. There's no room for a transformative experience that gives you a new perspective where you're actually listening to your wife and hearing something you didn't ever hear before because your own personal thinking was getting in the way of hearing what she was trying to tell you or he was trying to tell you.
Right.
And so just recognizing when you're caught up in this effortful thinking, rumination, this obsessing, this worry, this regret, because your feelings will tell you that, because it doesn't feel good to think that way. But when you let your foot off the gas, so to speak, of your thinking, and you just put it on the back burner, I'm going to just let this go for a while and trust that something will come to me when I'm not bearing down on it. That's when you're more likely, like I just had a mom in therapy with me this morning that was really worried about and who was flunking out of college and blah, blah, blah. And that she said, I was just not sleeping. When she first came to me, she was having ulcers. She was just had insomnia because she was obsessed and micromanaging her kids that were going off to college for the first time. And as she started understanding her thinking more, she says, it's just so great. I can just know that we're going to come up with a solution to this problem. I don't have to think about it. And I sleep through the night. I wake up the next morning and there the answer is it's right in front of me. And it was like, I couldn't see it when I was trying so hard. But when I let it go, the answer just popped up. And we all have experiences like that where, when we finally give up or get distracted or thinking about something else, that's when the solution pops in our head.
Right.
So the more we can understand how that works, the more available those insights are more readily and on a, we spend less time wasting our energy, in unproductive emotional meltdowns and vicious cycles. So, Dennis, I really appreciate the time, and I hope this was helpful to you and to your audience.
Oh, I think it's just going to be great. And one of the things that I'd like to just help the audience with is just if they want to know more about you and the books that you've written, what's the best way for them to find you?
Well, I have a website, joebaileyandassociates.com. And that Joe Bailey, the "and" and the "associates" are both written out. And you can just, information about my books, and I have lots of free videos on there and interviews with me on lots of different topics. So it's a free website.
Great.
I do have also a list of my books and DVDs and things on there as well.
Okay, and I'll put that link in the show notes so that people can, if they're on my website or they can, or on the podcast, they can just click on that and then it'll go directly to you. And I'll put the link to, the book that we've been talking about. Also on my bucket list for this year is to read your other book, Fear Proof Your Life. And so I'm looking forward to that one. And so, I hope that the audience will check out your books. Like I said, this is one of those foundational books that my wife and I are going to read it at least once or twice a year. And it's just been one of those things that we've seen how much it can help us just live our lives, to slow down, to not let our thinking get in our way, is that we're just sending it to people who we love and we think, wow, this would be great information for them. So thank you to you, and also to Richard. Very tragic that he died so early in life. I sometimes wonder, what else we would have gotten from him, but he gave so much. If I could, I just would like to this one powerful concept, and it was in the first paragraph of the book. And let me just grab that real quick. And you said it was one of the entries on his blog. And let me just open up here to the first page here. When you die, your inbox won't be empty. And I think that's such a powerful metaphor for this whole concept of slowing down, is that for some of us, we're just feeling so driven to getting things done, and feel like if we don't get things done, then life isn't working and so forth. And just great stuff by Richard, and also from you. And just want to thank you. And I'm very grateful that you took your time to spend time with me on our podcast. So thanks, Joe, and have a great day.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Dennis. Thanks for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening today. And if you found this podcast helpful, let your friends and family know about it. And if you will, go to iTunes and find the 5%ers podcast and leave a review and let other people know how it's been helpful. If you want to know more about being a 5%er, you can go to my website at dennisberg.org. And remember, folks, when it comes to your health, work hard, do your best, and never give up. Have a great day, everybody.